Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the program. I'm your host, Chris Wassel. With me, as always, Senior Timothy Rosenthal. Good evening, Timmy.
This is not a microphone, but I will tell you, apparently Chris approves of me using the speaker function of my phone.
It apparently sounds almost like a microphone, but not quite. All right, folks. Like we said, a little bit of a chock-full show tonight of craziness. We have Nutshots. That's right. We have Nutshots. We have the Injury Ninja. I mean, what would the show be without that damn bastard that keeps injuring Zach Parise over and over and over like something happened? Obviously, the surprises and failures of the first week of the playoffs. We still don't know what the heck goalie interference is, even now. We'll also talk about, is licking appropriate? And, of course, there was actually a coach that got fired today. Well, actually, coach and his staff. And the sad part is probably the next coach that comes in will make the playoffs and be hailed as a hero, when in reality, it was just because Calgary sucked that bad. Not that we gave it away.
Oh, whoever Mike Smith would be the key ingredient to that team, making or missing the playoffs.
Yeah, go figure. He was the key figure in them making it up till about game, 70? And then the last few games, well, yeah, it went poorly. The phone number to call in tonight, as always, is 424-675-8226. You know, we're doing this just because A, we can, and B, as always, you can enjoy it on iTunes come tomorrow morning. Yours truly does not have the shiny, happy press credentials for tomorrow. I'm going as mild-mannered fan, which means I can sit there and be a mean sort of person to Tampa fans, unlike last night.
How are these days being fans? Because I haven't been a fan since, I want to say, 4 or 5 years ago.
This is true. See, that's the nice part about having, like, the part-time press role. You do have, like, that sort of, you know, as long as you don't stupidly tweet about it or broadcast it on social media in a not-so-wise way, you're generally good to go. Because you'll just sound like the other 17,000 people that are in the arena. For me, I mean, personally, it's never a bad thing. And plus, I will not sit here on this show and advocate for the injury of a certain Tampa Bay player who shall be renamed nameless. Swede.
And speaking of which, do we go right into the Injury Ninja segment already?
We might as well, because to be honest, there's a lot of them, and now I apparently have been told I've sunk to new lows. I magically ended up in Voorhees, New Jersey today, allegedly. That's the kind of blame
I'm
getting.
Wait, are you sure that was you, or was that Radko Gudas?
He's an agent of the Injury Ninja. Whether it be friend or foe, it doesn't really matter.
Alrighty. Have we lost you?
Who is next on the Injury Ninja's list? Let's find out next only on the program.
Is this the Blog Talk Gremlins again? It is.
Folks, I think Chris is having some issues with the Gremlins, and I am waiting to hear back from him on Facebook, so hopefully we hear back soon.
Don't stagger it. Yes, indeed. I have found an even lower way to conquer gremlins. That's right, folks. We're back.
I must say, I guess I need to fix my over-unders a little bit. But with Blog Talk Radio, I guess sometimes you just have to go for the jugular.
You might as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry about that, folks. There's literally nothing we could do since apparently Blog Talk Radio deemed, I don't know, my microphone to be non-compos mentis. And I don't know why.
And ironically enough, at the start of the show, we were talking about me using the speakerphone and you using a new microphone.
You're right.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens here. And now we'll put these happy little things in as we go hopelessly 20th century here.
20th or 21st?
This is like 21st and a half.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right. So we have earbuds
on
now.
That's what we're trying to do, folks.
Hey, you know, why do this the normal way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sheesh. You know. All right. So now that we're hoping, the dumb thing which I'm going to attempt to do is I'm going to try and trick. It says that we're hopelessly called in, we're stuck. That the host is called into the show, but it won't allow the host to call back into the show. Which is utter brilliance. I know.
Yeah.
However, as always, the show must go on, and we'll just have to play it again, and we forgive everybody for our trespasses here.
Who is next on the Injury Ninjas list? Let's find out next only on the program.
That sounds about right.
At least we have a new robot to...
we'll have more robot along the way. It's just a question of me climbing out of the abyss that is... watch child for 7 hours Monday, watch child for 8 hours today, watch child at 6 a.m. in the morning tomorrow, zombies, apocalypse, screw the Walking Dead, this might be better, and I'm only half kidding. What can we do here? I wonder if this will work. Now, the fun part here with the old Injury Ninja is this, Timmy. We have now hit the time of the year where everything is vague and vague is everything. For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. So you're going to see some injuries and go, oh, crap, that looks as clear as anything, and you'll be told somehow that is an upper, middle, lower, or general soreness type of injury. Yep,
at this time of year, we even have the good old body injury.
Body injury has happened.
Yes.
And
it will happen again, I'm convinced.
Oh, without a doubt, it will. By the way, for those expecting goals in Columbus tonight, okay. I'm not sure either, but hey, who knew? Winnipeg and Minnesota obviously are just a few minutes in, and then later tonight we have the potential for what the. What had the Nightmare Bear making an appearance tonight, potentially, or later tonight? And yet, Nightmare Bear probabilities were actually a thing today on Twitter, which is a mind-blowing thing this early in the playoffs, especially when it's against L.A. of all teams, who are down 0-3 to Vegas. That's right, Vegas.
How much were our predictions?
Yeah, our predictions are so far up in smoke, it's not even funny. So what you basically have today, you know, basically with the injury ninja is this. So Timmy, Brennan Carlo's still dead, obviously. Cam Fowler is just as dead for Anaheim. We don't even worry about that anymore. Tommy Wingles still dead.
Yeah, but he is skating.
Okay, so we'll call him.
And once anything any other injuries happen to Bomb Six, you won't be seeing him.
Yeah, we'll call him healthy scratch.
Mhm.
But still injured. You know, it counts. It's still there. Matt Grelchick, Timmy, dead, alive, or Brady?
Bruce Cassidy said he is progressing, could be in for game four. He expects to be in for game four, but no confirmation either way. I think that you'll get confirmation on Thursday. He is scheduled to practice tomorrow as well.
Interesting stuff indeed, as always. You just never quite know in the playoffs. Hey, a player could be listed as probable and all of a sudden not play. So we've seen that as well. Let's see. Colorado, Eric Johnson still done. Semyon Varlamov still done. The great Sam Girard still done, but at least skating with a non-contact jersey. So there's some progress there. Columbus, Alex Weinberg is still out. It looks like a shoulder injury. It kind of walks and talks like a shoulder injury. Could possibly be that. But nobody is really saying they're using the standard upper body injury. And he is still day-to-day. Derek Forbrick is also still day-to-day with a lower body injury. I think it's an MCL issue. So if it's a lower end one and not so bad, Forbrick could potentially play very soon if, of course, LA survives a couple more games. Minnesota, ow, and more ow. Matt Dumba is not 100%, but he is playing. Some sort of lower body sort of tweak that he had the other night. Ryan Suter obviously is out. And Zach Parise has now entered the out list as well with a painfully fractured sternum. Now, people will go, okay, sternum, what does it do? Well, if you have a fractured sternum and it protrudes into any parts of your body, say near your heart, significantly bad. Okay, who am I kidding? It could be potentially fatal if not careful. So, needless to say, healing time for this, ladies and gentlemen, is unfortunately 6 to 8 weeks, which means he's pretty much out for the season. Ow. As I tell people, think of the sternum, you know, it's literally the breastbone. It holds the stuff in place. Because what usually happens is sternum near heart, things get bumped and everything else. And now, Timmy, here's the sad part in all of this. Vehicular collisions are the usual primary cause of a fractured sternum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out who Parise hit hard enough in the late stages of Game 3 to cause this injury. That's kind of the odd part in this. I'm still trying to figure out, like, who did he hit hard enough? And that's kind of the mystery. But the bottom line is he's out for the rest of the season, pretty much. Unless, of course, Minnesota makes it to the Stanley Cup Finals. Suppose it's possible, but I digress. Nashville is still waiting for Cali Yarncroc to come back. You combine that with the injury to Yannick Weber and a few players that were banged up on defense. last night. And Kevin Fiala was playing defense last night for Nashville, Timmy. And what could be best described as an adventure, to say the least. But it, you know, it was you know, he didn't play that poorly. So it wasn't, I don't know how to explain this to people. It's not like he planned on it, needless to say. And I think that's what made things a little bit, I don't know. I never expect that sort of thing. I mean, I remember one playoff when Scott Niedermayer was playing right wing, and that was a little bit different. That actually could work because once upon a time, long, long, long time ago, Senior Niedermayer played forward. And, you know, so it wasn't unheard of.
Out of all people, Patrice, I know we have to, going back to Boston, but you've seen Mark Grecki had a spleen removed, and Patrice Bergeron a few years later went up to him with a punctured lung.
It's true.
They still played. So I want to put out the question of him returning. The question is whether it's in that 6 to 8 week time frame, if they make it that far, or actually sooner than that.
Yeah, I do honestly think he is finito. But we'll say other injuries of the spotless mind, so to speak. Cue up Philadelphia, of course. Well,
yep.
I'm sure people have seen the video by now of Raku Gudas literally decapitating Sean Couturier in practice. Mind you, this is, stay with me today, because it's Philadelphia. We're talking practice here. Practice.
Of course.
Yes.
If only we had Allen Iverson queued up in our sound bites. And by the way, we will be having a few more sound bites to our little switchboard there in the next week. So any request you have, please send it to either yours truly at _TimRosenthal or at Chris Wassel DFS on Twitter.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Oh, by the way, Timmy, Patrick Hornquist is out for game four at least with an upper body injury. And, you know, Mike Sullivan pretty much was noncommittal as to when he would return. It's much the same thing with Sean Couturier. Barring some kind of miracle, I can't see Couturier playing in game four, especially when Claude Giroux just simply said, it's not good.
No.
Yeah, you never like to hear that from the captain of a team. So if you're planning on Couturier being in, no. I wouldn't. And to be honest, Couturier has struggled mightily over the last 10 games or so, including regular season and playoffs. I probably wouldn't if I had him on my fantasy playoff pool right now, if I had an option to drop him, I probably would. San Jose, Joe Thornton's not playing till round two at the earliest because there's no way in Hades they're risking him in game four. He is getting closer, we presume. That's at least what's been said all along. But again,
especially with the 3-0 lead. Now, if they I do agree that he might not be there around two, but back until round two. But if Anaheim winds up winning a game or two, and I don't see this happening, maybe Thornton comes back sooner. But I don't see it.
Yeah, because that would. Because this is allegedly, if you believe what's the actual Joe Thornton injury, this is about a 3 to 4 month injury at the best case scenario. So 3 months would be right about, yeah,
well, 23.
Next week. So it's a risk, but don't be shocked. Oh, by the way, hi, Tampa Bay. I was there at the game last night. And, yes, Tyler Johnson is definitely hurt. Will he play tomorrow? I don't know. He's questionable right now with an undisclosed injury. Obviously, Ryan Callahan, more of a question mark. I wouldn't be shocked if he was held out again with an upper body injury as well. The belief is that Tyler Johnson has some kind of upper body injury, but nothing's really been said. So, alas, it kind of is what it is in some sense. Vegas doesn't have really any significant injuries, let's be honest. Lucas Fiza is not a significant member of the Vegas Golden Knights. It's just one of those things. Washington, Andre Burakovsky, who had basically was being phased out anyway, is day-to-day with a looked like he banged up his collarbone pretty good the other night. He only played 2 minutes, or basically three shifts. And on the third shift, he was injured. And therefore, probably don't expect him for the rest of Washington's playoffs. That seems to, unless other injuries present itself and Burakovsky somehow recovers in time. It doesn't look very promising. Winnipeg, well, you know, Winnipeg's interesting because you would have thought Tobias Enstrom would have been healthy by now. It's been about 3.5 weeks. And one's got to wonder if it's really a little bit more serious than what they're leading on. And originally it was thought to be a very mild MCL sprain, and that time has kind of come and gone. So while Enstrom's not a significant part of the equation, when you lose three players out of your top six defensively, Timmy, defensive point of view, normally, at least it's not ideal. So basically you have Kulikov, Enstrom, and Myers all out now. Because Myers obviously, banged up again, which, yeah, it's nothing new, but at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's fair. You know, hurts a little. Yada, 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 and owie, 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 basically. So, you know, it's part of why Winnipeg's penalty kill has gone the way it has of late. And it's also another reason why Minnesota may have a little bit more hope in the series than people would think. This first period, however, has been played very slow so far. Shots are like, what, 4-5-3 or something like that, Winnipeg. In the, wait a minute, hold on. 6 now. Wow. Good job, Twitter, for updating that. Evidently, I mean, it's so crazy now that Tucker Poolman is back in the Winnipeg lineup, and there was no way, late in the season you would have thought Poolman would have returned, but yet here he is. Poolman is kind of a shoot first, ask questions type of defenseman.
If he was a forward, he would have been okay. But you look at him now, and it's like.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's one of those times where you sit there and you look and you go, oh, well, really, you had to play him now? And it's like, yeah, they don't have much of a choice. I mean, what else are they really going to do? I mean, the nice thing is they can sit there and play guys like Mufflin and Trouba like 25, 30 minutes, and it won't kill them because they really haven't been overly taxed throughout the season. Buffalo was injured for a little bit, and obviously Trouba a little bit more, so it doesn't hurt. But the thing is this, you know, Poolman, to be fair, played 3 years at North Dakota, as everybody knows, then played, you know, in the minors. He's 24, as hard as it is to believe. I don't feel like he's 24. I mean, I covered this guy in the draft. 2013, actually, and thought he would go higher than the fifth round. I honestly thought he would go like maybe third, which goes to show sometimes you never truly know, and such. So, it's a learning experience always. But Yeah, Pullman is more that type of guy that likes to fire the puck a lot when he gets a chance. And to be honest, you know, just looking at these early numbers, Timmy, it looks like Bufflin and Trouba are going to have to play 25 plus minutes. They really are.
Easily.
Oh yeah.
Right now, Truba's at 631.
Yeah, which if you map it out, 631, about 5.5 minutes left in the first. Yeah, that's about.
Yeah.
That
you
maps out to about 27 minutes.
Get a few more shifts, probably 45 to 30. He could be just a hair under 10 minutes in the first period. So we might be looking at over 25 minutes here.
Yeah, it could very easily kind of work out that way. Now, obviously, with the Washington Columbus game, I am a little bit surprised. I did not expect this to be scoreless. And the other thing too is, the second half of that period, Washington did play better. For what it's worth, I know. Another Tom Wilson penalty. I get it. But they did play better. And game two, honestly, was probably the most capital way to lose that the Capitals could ever come up with. Now, am I going to go as far as a certain Vice Sports article that basically says the Caps are losing almost on purpose for must-see TV? No.
Yeah, I just don't know where you come up with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why Dave Lozo is writing for who he is, and that's it. That's probably one of the reasons why. Why are you even wasting your time on writing something like just that's just complete utter fluff? Why not even get in a little bit of why they're losing as opposed to comparing it to some kind of movie and TV show? And it's just silly. It really is. It's really silly. Do they lose in some ways that you just can't make up? Absolutely. Did they choke? Yeah. Is it normal? Yeah. Are we used to it by now? Yep. Did you expect them to lose that way? Probably. And that's the way you have to kind of look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the more interesting heel turn would obviously have been if the goal had been reversed. But that wasn't going to happen.
No.
So, come on, people. You know better.
This is something that I think Ryan Lambert would write too, easily.
Yeah, and that's kind of the frustrating part in all of this. It's like, really? This is what you're writing about?
Yeah.
When there's a jabillion other different stories that you could use in these playoffs, like, oh, I don't know, how Vegas is literally infuriating the Kings, or how Anaheim is completely just folded against
mm-hmm.
San Jose.
Without
because
Joe
of
Thornton.
Their coaching. Because of their coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go figure. Not playing Joe Thornton, obviously, was arguably the best move that Peter DeBoer had. They just look so much faster than Anaheim. I think they would honestly be slower if Thornton was in the line. I know, Timmy, the power play. I know. But so far, it's working anyway. So what's the difference? I looked back at this last night real quick. Amongst the ugliness. Let's see. Now, where was this thing here? Let's see if this works, Timmy. Now. When I look, of course they don't quite have the right log, but here's the thing.
Oh, by the way, Truba's ice time is going to take a little bit of a hit because it's called for interference.
Wah, wah, wah. No, that means Bufflin's will go up. There we go. Now.
But who are you putting on the penalty thing? Kill? Your Winnipeg. Other than.
Yeah, that's been a little dicey of a thing in this series. I think Winnipeg's like right around 63%. But getting back to this, Anaheim had 46 shots on goal in game three. Could you really count, other than maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 good chances at best out of all of them?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of the problem. So, it's like, how do you even paint a positive picture here if you're Anna? I don't think you really can. I try to. Now here are some of the interesting points in this. At 5-on-5, they were really good. The closest game I could think of to this, Timmy, was the Devils Vegas game from March, where Vegas literally dominated 5-on-5, and it didn't show up on the scoreboard at all. Completely didn't. Now, here's a little bit as to why. This is where it gets fun. Okay. Anaheim's Corsi and Fenwick in that game were 58 and 59% respectively. That's really good. Thoroughly just fluky good. That's really, really good. Shots for percentage was over 60, which was the best it had been in the series. One of the big things that San Jose exploited in particular was the shot and territorial advantage in games 1 and 2. While they outscored Anaheim at even strength 4-1. Didn't seem to make a bloody heck of a difference. They outscored Anaheim 4-0 in game 3 at even strength. So, yeah, that meant a whole boatload of pfft. Let's go further. Despite all those, here you go, Timmy. Despite all those chances, right? High danger chances were dead even at even strength. Oops. It gets worse. High danger goals allowed for Anaheim in this series. 6-6. Ow. Wait. It gets worse yet. High danger save percentage in the series. Start off at 90. Really good. 81. Average. And you can take a guess predictably. Save percentage was really bad last night.
Yeah.
8-10 at even strength, by the way.
Overall, it was well under 800.
Yeah. Look, again, like I've often said to people, there are just series that sometimes you get wrong, and then there's series that you just get royally wrong.
This is
undoubtedly
one of,
them. It is. So much so, Timmy, that I admitted defeat and put up a GIF of Super Contra meets Duck Hunt. Oh, my God. It is one of the crazier GIFs, just because it's literally like Super Contra. It's just the napalm gun and everything else, just incinerating ducks left, right, and sideways. And oh, It's brutal.
Instead of having a dog, we really need to have a land shark on the duck hunt there.
You know what? That's the one thing that I'm a little bit disappointed that no one created.
I know. I'm a little surprised, especially since the Bay Area is so tech-savvy that you would think they would have it at the drop of a hat or snap of a finger. But no, no, that's not been the case yet.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that's not the only surprise of the proverbial postseason so far. Obviously, again, Vegas. Now, one of the things noticed in the season matchups, Timmy.
Before we do, Mark Scheifele, 1-0 Jets, and we got a Capitals goal as well.
Like I said, the choke of a choke is still a choke. Now it gets fun. It really does. Like I said, the people, it's really God. I hope it's not like that Sharks-Calgary series from 2004 where literally nobody could win at home.
Tom Wilson.
Oh, jeez, really? That's going to hurt. All right. Now, here's the interesting thing from the Vegas-LA series. How nuts is this? Vegas is literally dominating possession with basically three or four players. That's it. Basically, Marchessault, Tuck, and James Neal in particular, killing LA left, right, and sideways. Overall, in the three games so far, Vegas pretty much, you know, right around 57% possession. Against LA, mind you. And it's not, they picked on the Kopitar line even as well, to a lesser extent. I went searching for this. Because this is fun. Here we go. Playoffs. And thanks to our friends at Natural Stat Trick and their pay to gain more access, which is extremely cheap. It's even cheaper than The Athletic to me. So I went looking at this a little bit. Let's select Anze Kopitar. Let's see what happens. All right, let's pick another player at random for fun. Let's see who is on his line the most so far in the playoffs. We can go to Dobber Hockey for that. So it'll tell us line frequency. Let's see. So obviously Dustin Brown is almost always with Kopitar. That's easy enough. So let's plug good old Dustin Brown in. And we'll put Iafallo in just because he's there at least a significant amount of time at even strength. Okay, this is where it gets kind of crazy. How bad is Alex Iafallo on this line with Kopitar? Here you go, Timmy. Basically, they are 35% possession with him on the line in two games. Without him, they're right around average. But even then, they are it's funny. They're bleeding scoring chances, Timmy. But yet they have twice as many high danger chances. It's kind of goofy that way. And if you're looking at some more dire numbers for LA and you go, well, okay, it's pretty average with the Kopitar line, and that much is true for the most part. It's slightly below average. However, the other lines combined are even worse. And it's not even close to me. Matter of fact, scoring chance wise.
And we got the goal from Washington. So Columbus has them right where they want them, down to nothing.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. This took a little bit longer than I thought it would. Oh, God. I can't. If this seriously happens again, do you just fire Barry Trotz at the end of the series on the spot?
You have to.
If you're Washington, do you just sit there? I mean, look, I know this sounds very much – look, it sounds heartless. But at some point, do you sit there and you go, okay, you know what? All right, we need a new coach. We're trading a whole bunch of players. Backstrom, you're gone. This guy, you're gone. Carlson, we're not signing you. Although I don't think that would be necessarily the smartest move because it's not all Carlson's fault. But there's kind of a bottom line here, and you sit there and wonder, go, hmm. And, you know, again, like I said, there's a little bit of scariness to it. This is rough. Some of these numbers, Timmy, are just downright frightening. In this Vegas series, it's like burn before reading. And I guess that's kind of in two of the three matchups you saw this between LA and Vegas, and particularly one that everybody talks about is the matchup where literally Vegas played LA coming off a back-to-back, you know, on the back end of a back-to-back, and everybody expected LA just to steamroll them. And in the first period, LA basically did. And then, to be honest, the last two periods and a little bit of overtime, except for maybe 5 or 6 minutes, was all Vegas. And, at one point, shots were like 29-11 Vegas over the final two periods. And that probably was the moment, Timmy, where I went, you know, Vegas might be for real here.
A Washington second goal got disallowed because, offside. Offside.
Oh, I want a goalie interference in the wheel. Come on, that goal just went right down. That's a shame.
Nope, nothing's wrong with offside reviews at all. Nothing.
You know, damn those skates, you know, that unexpectedly, darn. All right. Now, other surprises of daring do in these playoffs. Philly and Pittsburgh, not a surprise.
No, not at all.
It's pretty much
in fact, goaltending has been so bad in this series from both teams that it just might be blowouts for the next few games. And I can see Philly coming back into the series at some point, whether it's Game 4 or Game 5, even without Couturier, and blowing out the Penguins.
Yeah, you have this feeling like the series just is destined for at least 6 games. Although I was disappointed by the fact that, in lack of a better term, Philly really did not up the physicality in Game 3 like I thought they would.
No. You thought they would because of home ice.
Yeah, like the first 10 minutes, okay, yeah, sure. And after that, it just went. Everything vanished, including the fans. Now, you couldn't say that. Extremely chippy and downright murderously. Next time, Mikhail Sergachev will not pick a fight with Brian Boyle, ever.
That's not a good
smart
idea to begin.
Yeah, let's just explain to the former Montreal prospect that not a smart move. And there was a lot of just sort of shenanigans in that game, for lack of a better term. I am amused by Tampa thinking that Blake Coleman dove somehow. I'm still trying to figure out how you get a dive out of that, but okay. Good luck on that. And then, of course, somehow Nico Hischier was being relishing getting a stick to the nut shot from Victor Hedman. Yeah, that totally works. That's perfectly legal. Oh, wait, if you do it to a devil, it's perfectly legal, apparently. I was shocked that the officials called as much as they did last night in that game. And then, of course, obviously, there was the craziness late in the third period where there were 102 penalty minutes. It just gave a misconduct to pretty much everybody that was on the ice and said, go home. Obviously, now that series is a series mostly because the Devils managed to stop the bleeding just enough on the penalty kill late to not only survive but when kind of going away. The goofy thing is, New Jersey has over 85 shots in the last two games against Tampa Bay, which I'm not surprised by at all. For those wondering, a certain New Jersey team started out really slow against the Rangers and then amped it up a little bit. And this series has a little bit of the same feeling. It doesn't mean it's going to go the same way, but the difference is New Jersey had a slightly better penalty killer, i.e. Marty Brodeur, even at age 40. And the strange part was our penalty killing that postseason was magical up until about the LA series. It was strange at times. What they would do more from a shorthanded standpoint as far as scoring chances than anything else. So, New Jersey is definitely back in the series. They have to win on Wednesday night. And if they do that, I think that creates a lot of pressure on Tampa Bay. It creates
Absolutely.
A ton of pressure. And we don't know what Tyler Johnson's health status is for tomorrow just yet. I'm not going to speculate there, at least. But I expect a more of the same as far as the chippiness, the animosity. This is the way New Jersey has to play. They have to play this way in the playoffs. There is no that they have to go for the kill. And speaking of course, that's kind of why some teams are in the position that they are. Like we mentioned, Philly. And then there's Boston and Toronto, which, I don't know, has its own sort of oddity. I mean, when Thomas Buchanan suddenly starts playing like he's 28 again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Babcock kind of stumbled into a good move because, look, Buchanan on that line is perfect for what
if nothing else, he can play, he's pretty good defensively, which is something
right. They
sorely needed against the Bergeron line.
Just a little. Okay, maybe a lot. And look, the Bergeron line did have its share of chances.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
Yeah.
And you would expect them to...
Time that Pastrnak and Marchand hit the post in the third period, and then that diving save on Frederick Anderson on Pastrnak. Yes, it was... we still had a two-goal lead at the time, but... Instead of being down, only leading by one, they kept that two goal lead intact, and that's really an important moment, and people don't tend to realize that, even though they had even though they seem to have things well in control there.
Now, I guess the question is, with this series in particular, what does the extra day off going into Game 4 have as far as any kind of effect whatsoever?
Man, it's an interesting question. Maybe it gives both teams an extra day to watch film, because let's look at it this way. There are some flaws in that game as well from both sides. And no, Columbus didn't have to wait to go down 2-0 to tie it tonight.
Well, you know, look, one goal is much easier, apparently, to overcome than two. Will this be challenged, though? I'm kidding.
If it is, I give up.
Oh, come on. You know it had to be asked at least once.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's fair, at least. It's a decent enough question. All right, so the goal is from Pierre-Luc Dubois, indeed. So they really can't stop that Panarin line, can they?
No.
God, Panarin's just eating them alive. He really is. Jeez. All right.
So, not to go to Columbus, because I want to avoid that cannon at all costs.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear the can, except for me. Because usually New Jersey does pretty well. Up until this year, New Jersey did pretty well there. So we usually don't have to hear the cannon all that much.
One time it's one too many, though, I think.
Yeah, but what I used to do to people is just, I'd wear earplugs.
Yeah, I do too.
You have the earplug. Yeah, but it's, I guess maybe I'm used to it a little bit, you know, as far as loud pyrotechnic noises. And it's just like, okay. It's like, yeah, it's adorable. But you know what? I was like, as I said to Kristen Repke, I was like, yeah, let's play 32 Ghosts from Trent Reznor and play that over and over in a melodic way and see the Philly coach absolutely crap their pants. I still remember that from 2012. And they weren't sure, and they didn't really know how it would go over. And I'm telling you, Timmy, when that Jumbotron went red, and you heard the music, it was just like, oh shit, what the hell am I walking into? That had to be one of the more surreal and yet just awesome playoff experiences. Because obviously, you know, every time they did it afterwards, it was like, okay, that's pretty cool and stuff. But the first time it was just like, whoa. That doesn't give you goosebumps as a fan, or at least feel a little bit, there's something wrong with you. All right. The other series of note, obviously, is Nashville and Colorado, which, hey, what do you know? Not everybody likes PK Subban anymore, apparently. I guess Subban going after Nathan MacKinnon a few times drew the ire of the Colorado media and fans alike to the point of, well, we don't like him. And he's a dirty player and everything else. It's the playoffs, Colorado. You remember that, right? Yeah. Claude Lemieux, anybody? Ray Bourque, even as an Avalanche, was a pretty dirty player. You know, Adam Deadmarsh. I mean, do I want to, like, start laying down an entire list of Colorado players from yesteryear that just were absolute scumbags in the playoffs? I mean, you can do that for every team.
Yeah.
You know, there's no team is exempt here. Though I will say this, I think the real concern for Nashville is, you gave up several goals in game one. You gave up the first goal in game one. You gave up the first goal in game two. You gave up the first goal in game three.
And this isn't exactly the start that people expected for Nashville. Although, to be fair, the result is about what most people expected. They figured Colorado would take one game at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be going into game four probably at 2-1.
Even with Bernier.
Well, I mean, Bernier's been decent enough. Aside from the third period, where he has not been good, to be honest. But unexpectedly, this has been a series where, well, okay, you know, maybe it could be one. Or at least it stands a chance to go, say, six, as opposed to, you know, being that easy five-game cakewalk that most everybody expected.
It still might happen, but but it might not be a five-game cakewalk per se. I mean, Colorado has played them a little tightly this series, and even if they lose the next two games, I kind of expect that to be the same thing.
You know, like I've said to people, you can look at every one of these series and go, well, okay, you know, pretty much the 3-0 series are dead in the water unless – of course, you know, L.A. could do it. They could pull it off. They could come back.
Mm-hmm. Anaheim
is a little more dicey and doubtful just because of the injuries and the fact that Randy Carlyle still has not figured out that Andre Tache should be on the top line with Getzlaf.
And Washington, if you lose tonight, you're done in four.
No. Maybe. Yeah, I think you're right on that one. Definitely think you're right on that one, Timmy. You know, it's the old, how many times can you,
how many times can you play with fire in one series?
Hey, they like it apparently.
Yeah.
The other thing, I guess, the other subplots in these series obviously are always goaltending. And know how it's going to play out because unfortunately, like we've said all along pretty much on the show, Corey Schneider is just not 100%. And it's a shame. Because when you're not 100% and mentally you can't be 100%, it's just a doubly bad combination. He was able to fight through it last night. He's played extremely well in the game and basically game and a half that he's played in the series. He saved New Jersey last night, without a doubt. The problem is he has to do it three more times, but it has happened before. If you're a Tampa fan, you remember this well, and you kind of cringe knowing that arguably in 03 and in 07, they probably had the better team than New Jersey, even though the records didn't indicate it. And New Jersey won 03 would have been a sweep and had not been for crazy Pavel Kubina taking a slap shot at Scott Stevens' head. And there's the good job TSN for finally updating that. Good job.
Huh. And we got Washington back ahead on a 2-man advantage.
Yeah, I mean Columbus's penalty kill is not very good. Yeah, Washington's hasn't been all that good either, which is kind of unexpected. That's the one thing that Washington has been able to hang their hat on for years. And, hey, look, it's New Jersey guy John Carlson. No, we do not acknowledge his Massachusetts days, Demi.
So we're
formative...
talking future devil John Carlson here or future devil James Van Riemsdyk?
Hey, you know what? If all these players can go home, hey, they can come back to New Jersey, right? Yeah, totally. Probably not going to happen. But you never know. It is funny, though, that Washington's two goals both came from defensemen, because they did change the Wilson goal, by the way.
Yeah, they did, to Niskanen.
Yeah, go figure. So those dreaded dangerous point shots are looming large again. And that's the one thing that Columbus has a problem with on the penalty kill is those point shots. And what I'm starting to call almost like the swinging gate screen that we're seeing more and more in the playoffs, where you see the usually the defenseman on the left-hand side sort of pivot to the middle, Timmy. And then you'll see one or two players going right along the goalie's line of vision, almost like in a pendulum. And it may be one, it may be two, it may be three players even. But it usually is a nondescript shot from the middle, and it will find – I've seen it happen like five or six times in the last few nights. And it finds its way in the net.
Washington didn't get called for a penalty there. I don't know.
That generally should have been a call. Yeah.
I'll have to watch replay on that.
Yeah, I think you're going to need to watch replay on that one. But,
I
said.
Speaking of which, we are talking about the Caps maybe taking a trot down memory lane once the season ends. No pun intended. I think it's time that we go over some coaches' firings.
Hey, what do you know? We have, like, coaches just getting the axe. I guess it had to happen. Hold on, we have something for this, don't we? Don't we?
Do we?
Somewhere in here? You know, teams that just want to take a bloody chainsaw to their teams and just make moves. A little gruesome there, but yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The Calgary Flames, Timmy. Hire the coach.
Burn, burn, burn. Burn, baby, burn.
Now, to be fair, the Flames not only fired Glenn Gulson, they also fired assistants Dave Cameron and Paul Girard as well. Of course, the GM survives somehow, even though you could argue that part of the collapse was because of his own doing. And you could also argue that part of the collapse is entirely not the coach's fault, because when your team shoots like 4.8% at even strength to the final 15 games of the season, or as I like to call it, Buffalo level, you kind of do not deserve to make the playoffs at that point.
No.
So when that shooting percentage regresses upward next year, and they ultimately do make the playoffs, it really won't be because of the coach. It'll just simply be because the players had a little bit more in the way of luck as far as putting pucks in the net. Although,
a good coach wouldn't hurt, even if they luck out a little bit.
Can you really call some of the potential candidates good coaches?
Oh, not all. Not even Tippett.
Let's see.
He didn't have
Tippett
much to work with in Arizona, and he made something out of that. Took a couple playoff appearances in the Western Conference Final. I mean, he did more with less there. He'd be maybe the only candidate, and even then, I don't think he'd be the answer for this team. Maybe a couple playoff appearances, but that's about it.
Yeah, a couple of the other candidates that were mentioned included Alain Vigneault and Bill Peters, which that's not going to solve anything at all.
Not at all. In fact, that would be, in Vigneault's case, it's not so much of quote returning to Montreal, but that's the type of hire that would suck the life out of the Flames. No, I'm not blaming Claude for all that much for what's happening in Montreal, but even he's not didn't get what he should have out of them this year.
Yeah, you can argue that.
I don't think Vigneault, and with the better team, is going to get what he can out of this. If you were to go to Calgary.
Yeah, that's a concern. That really is.
How about this? Do they wait it out and we dare say his name right now again? Barry Trotz?
I don't think that's going to work either.
No.
That's the problem for me, Timmy, with all this. When you make these kind of moves like what the Rangers have done, obviously firing Alain Vigneault, and to me it pretty much seems that Bill Peters is not coming back to Carolina. Although laughably, it's not been official. All right, if I'm wrong, Timmy, this hasn't been officially announced that he's been basically dismissed.
Right.
So he's sort of dismissed in waiting almost at this point, because if he's being trotted out as candidates for jobs, and basically in so many words, he's been told allegedly by ownership that go look for a job, but yet he hasn't been fired yet. Odd, but true. You look around and you go, all right, Dave Haxtell is probably on the hot seat, even though Philly made the playoffs. Especially if they flame out and lose in five to Pittsburgh. I think he may even be gone. Jeff Blashill somehow survived in Detroit. I don't understand that at all. That makes zero sense. Ken Holland obviously survives another year. Again, huh?
And so did Todd McClellan and Peter Chiarelli.
I don't, yeah. Again, I mean, the coaches that were fired compared to... Look, let's be honest. You don't want to say this about Edmonton, but I do think... Is it crazy to suggest that the last two seasons both were flukes?
Yeah.
They're not really the 70-something point team, and they're not the around 100-point team either.
They're somewhere in between. I agree.
I honestly think they're like a slightly above 500 team that perennially just misses out on the playoffs. With that roster.
Between 90 points in the West, that's obviously doesn't get it done.
Yep. And to me, that's a huge problem. I mean, and it's a big one. So, you're looking at guys that are potentially on the proverbial hot seat. All right. So Rick Tocchet survived. Based on Arizona's second half, he's safe. Obviously, Bruce Cassidy, has bought much time in Boston. I think he's slightly safe there. Just a hunch. Phil Housley looks like he's going to stay another year, or at least that's the inkling of inklings. Blashill's staying in Detroit. Bob Bugner's obviously staying in Florida. Julian is staying in Montreal, but has a very short leash, according to people up in Montreal.
The one who should have a short leash is their GM.
I think he's going to. And then they're going to hire another French Canadian GM and just repeat the cycle.
And there is one thing he can do that can be slightly better and make up for the Subban trade with the Pacioretty trade. And this is, and by the way, do not trade for a one for one like you did Subban for Weber. You have to get draft picks and you have to develop, which Claude Julien, as we well know, is not a coach for development purposes.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a lot like Alain Vigneault in that sense, where he just cannot play young people. Peter DeBoer's oddly enough gotten a little bit better at that.
Yeah. And you know what? You have to develop that. It doesn't come easy.
I agree. But you know, you go like I said, you go through some of these teams, and it's fair. You go, okay. Guy Boucher is a question mark. I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously Dorian is saying
to start the season.
Yeah, I got to think that it's kind of a shame because he's really being dealt a god awful team. I mean, there really is no way to win there.
No. They kind of almost have to use the 1-3-1 trap. And even then, they don't have the guys in place to do that.
Yeah, it's a problem on top of a problem on top of a bigger problem. Let's see. Obviously, Tampa and Toronto, your coaches are safe.
Carolina. Even if they lose in five, that Babcock would not be back, really. There were people who actually thought that in Toronto.
Toronto didn't even want New Jersey to make the playoffs. And believe me, they tried their damnedest. That's the players. That's the officials. And yeah, okay, fair enough. But all right, going through this, Carolina. Bill Peters is basically gone, or functionally gone. If he's being he's being trotted out as coaching, strong candidate for other jobs, at least two of them that I've seen. He's functionally gone. Ownership has basically said, well, Ron Francis, you're bumped up and gone. They're going to hire a GM, which presumably means they're going to hire – the GM will choose a coach. It probably won't be Peters. It's also likely why they're waiting for the inevitable to be announced. Columbus, I don't know. I mean, if Columbus were to somehow lose this series.
That one said, well.
Not saying that would happen, but if Columbus were to lose this series, there would be significant question marks on both GM and coach, particularly coach, although it's a little bit unfair because, to be honest, in this case, the GM shopped for a lot of the goods, and the goods haven't delivered. But again, Columbus could come back and make this all a moot point, and such. This is just the worst case scenario. If Columbus were to blow this 2-0 series lead, what would happen? New Jersey obviously is still in the rebuilding phase, even though they're a little bit ahead. The Rangers kept Jeff Gordon on. Fired Elaine Vigneault. So it'll be interesting to see. I've always thought Gordon should go the college route. There's a few candidates in particular, one from Denver University and one from BU perhaps. That could fit the bill.
That would be an interesting work if he decided to go there. He could. He's going to go after a big name coach here. I do agree with you on that.
No, but I don't think it would be a bad idea.
No.
Go college route.
No.
But in terms of
pros, I agree that he won't go big name. He won't
go after the trot. Look, Gordon's next hire absolutely has to be somebody that can develop players because they just could not do that the last few seasons in New York, and it showed. And then obviously moving on, the Islanders, yes, they are keeping Doug Weight and Gar Snow for the 24 billionth time.
And we wonder why John Tavares will probably not sign with the Islanders. That's probably why.
You know what?
You can have all the nice new arenas you want in Belmont Park, but it's not going to help.
Yeah, I don't know what Tavares is going to do. I mean, he's going to test the market, and that's where it gets really wild and interesting.
They do have who will wind up being the rookie of the year in Matt Barzal, but is he going to be your top line are the future. A lot of the points he got were a result of teams keying in on Tavares, I think. He's going to have
to step up
on the first line next year. Can he do that?
I don't know if he can.
He has the potential to do that, but that's still a question that needs to be answered.
Yeah, that's something that's going to be tough for him to do next season. He being such a playmaker, that's rough. And nobody knows how, say, Anders Lee and Josh Bailey would mesh with a Barzal. Barzal's just ridiculously lightning fast. I don't know if they could keep up with either one could keep up with him, to be honest. You'd almost have to make that second line, Timmy, that entire second line that they have with Beauvillier and Eberle, the first line. You'd almost have to do that.
Yep.
Because those are players that can play with a Barzal. They can keep up with his accelerations and his mobility.
So what does that do for Anders Lee and Josh Bailey?
Great question. Nobody really knows. Again, the problem is the Islanders are going to hold the bag on this until July 1st, you know, first week of July. And because the draft is passed and everything else, they're really not going to be able to make much in the way of moves until September. That's rough. It's not like some of these other situations where you see where top flight free agent, you kind of know they're not going to re-sign. You can at least get some value for them. You can trade their rights, et cetera, or trade them before the draft.
I don't think you'll be able
to
trade
to do this for them.
They're going to try.
They might try, but I can't see it.
Not when a player like that hits the market, and probably the biggest name in the last 5, 6, 7 years to hit the market.
He's up there. He's definitely up there. Now, all right, going through some of these other ones. Philly, like we said before, Dave Hextall is definitely a huge question mark. I do think Ron Hextall takes some heat if the Flyers flame out in 5, but he's not going anywhere. Mitchell Lamb, we all know Mike Sullivan is safe in Pittsburgh with Jim Rutherford. We don't have to worry about that. But Washington's the obvious question. You know, Washington will be a question with drops. And even GMBM, or almost going to call him BO, if they go on to lose the series.
Not only do you have to win the first round, you have to win the second round, I think, just to be safe. Maybe.
I don't know. If they were to come back and somehow win round one, that might buy.
Oh, that might buy him round two, but I think they have to at least make the conference final this year.
It's a tough one. I think it's closer than maybe people think. Trotz would still be very much on the hot seat, at least. Going to the West real fast, Chicago, safe. Colorado, safe. Dallas, obviously, Ken Hitchcock retired because either that or Julius Honka was going to find his house. And, yeah, either way. So, you know, Dallas is in the market for a coach. And this is where it starts to get a little bit interesting. Minnesota, probably. Ooh, that one's a little dicey. Minnesota's coaching situation is kind of one to stay tuned on.
I think LA, you're safe with Stevens.
So obviously, you know, Nashville, you're safe. St. Louis is a question mark. There's a lot of moving parts right now.
I still think
Louis
you're safe
possible.
With Jose Peter DeBoer for one more year anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vegas, safe, and Vancouver, Travis Green, his first year, did a decent job, I think.
Job at what he had in a declining Sedin twins, which, you know, actually he got a lot out of them in the second half in particular, which was unexpected.
He has some young talent to work with there.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you know, they do have some talent on the way. And obviously talent, you know, with Brock Besser. And you look at Vegas safe, San Jose safe, LA safe. Edmonton, as amazingly as it sounds, safe. Calgary obviously just fired their coaching staff, so they'll be looking for a coach, like we mentioned. Arizona safe, and then there's Anaheim. I don't know. You know, Bob Murray's been known to just, like, go scorched earth before.
Mm-hmm. Here's where I think Carlisle is safe, and we have just a few seconds left here. If they come back and make it a series, if they come back and force a game six or a game seven, I think he has the right to stay.
Yep.
But it could could lead to him being on a short leash next year.
Oh, it could, as we head into the overtime portion of the show. At this point, I think that may be the only way that he stays.
Yeah.
I think Murray really does strongly consider dismissing Carlisle. And if they get swept, it's an absolute. There is no way they should even be in this position. There really is not any. How they played in game three, Timmy, overall flow of play, is how they should have played from the start in the series. And it still didn't matter. That's what's scary. They cannot finish at all. And it's not just Martin Jones playing better. They just flat out, they've had chances. It's not like they have not.
Yeah. I mean, they were worth Toronto in games one and two.
They really do, and even in Game Three, in some ways they looked even worse despite having 46 shots. Which is why, like I've said, sometimes it's not the end all be all to have a bunch of shots, right, Claude Julien? Right. But again, it's one of those things that we often talk about here that sort of undermentioned in a way. Like we said, tonight it seems like a road kind of night, at least so far. After two, Washington is up 2-1 in Columbus. Again, night is young, still third period. Winnipeg behind a much better performance from Connor Hellebuyck tonight, which was honestly expected. Is up one, they're up 1-0 on Minnesota. Still about 3.5 minutes left in the second period. Shots are pretty even for the most part. It's kind of been a goofy sort of game too. Penalties have been relatively even. The fun one is this one, Timmy. The Connor Hellebuyck slash midway through the second period. I did not see that coming.
No.
That's one you're going to have to see on video, because that's
very Tim Thomas-esque.
That was definitely Thomas-esque. No doubt about it. Obviously Vegas and LA get underway at 10:30. The only thing I can hope for is that this game does not last till 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Please settle this in overtime.
Yeah, seriously. I got my weekly appearance up in Maine tomorrow.
Yeah, just that.
And we also got something to wrestle with on the WWE Network.
This is true. Kung Pao.
Get your Kung Pao chicken ready.
Oh, I love Kung Pao chicken. Damn it. Yeah, this is definitely going to be some kind of – tomorrow is going to be a lights-out playoff night. And you figure Pittsburgh, Philly, Tampa, New Jersey alone is going to be something else. And then Nashville, Colorado,
Anaheim,
San Jose for the late games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, of course, now there is a little part of me that is rooting for LA to survive tonight. Only because it gives me just a little bit more to write about with a few columns along the way, later in the week. Like, just stretch it a little bit more. Just a little. Not a lot, but just enough. So there's always that. And hey, don't know what day of the week we will be able to do the show.
Yeah, and we don't know either. The series until we have a better idea
Yeah, it depends on what series are still going and what series have ended.
Ironically enough, we couldn't be out of the first round by the end of the weekend.
We could. It's possible.
It happened last year. I don't think there was a first round series that went 7, was there?
I don't think so. No, wait a minute. No, they didn't either. Damn. I kept thinking Edmonton did, but no, I think they won in 6.
Yeah, I believe they did.
Oh,
as
boy.
Well.
Oh, boy. Let's pull this up. This will be fun. I kind of like this. Going through yesteryear. Holy good God. You know what's more fun to do this with is the Wikipedia site.
Yeah. They can't alter it that much. Abs went 6, Ottawa, Boston went 6, Washington, Toronto went 6, Pittsburgh, Columbus 5, Nashville swept Chicago, St. Louis 1-5, Anaheim swept, Edmonton 1-6. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, how nuts is that? You had two sweeps in the West. One which wasn't a surprise because it was Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Although it kind of sets up this year's surprise, which is really hysterically funny. And then you had the national sweep of Chicago, which nobody saw coming. You had the impending fall of the Canadiens, which you kind of saw coming, even with the Rangers beating them.
By the way, I'm still a little bummed we didn't get Bruins Habs in round one. And had we gone into the 1-8-2-7 format, we would have had Bruins Habs on round one because I imagine they would have given the top two seats to the division winners.
Right.
You are correct. Of course, we're still talking about how flawed this playoff format is. And we looked at, Ottawa Boston was a 6-7 series, essentially.
All right. This format worked 35 years ago. It's really a format that just doesn't work in today's NHL. And that could be agreed on pretty much almost universally by people. That's a miracle in of itself.
Yeah. People actually agreeing.
Ah, damn it. Who knew? But alas, we are getting to the time of the show where it's just about time to say goodbye. So we can watch the last little bits of, basically most of the third period of Washington and Columbus, and then the third period of Winnipeg and Minnesota, which... Still a little bit surprised that, one goal combined. And I mean, look, I know you, losing Zach Parise was significant, but wow, and just that game. It's weird. There's been a few high quality chances, but it doesn't. It just, I don't know. It feels kind of slow, which obviously suits Winnipeg well, because you know they can play anyway. But playing slow, methodical hockey is just something that, you know, they can do well when called upon,
when needed,
right?
And that's why they're such a dangerous playoff team too. You want to go running?
You know what I mean.
Go ahead. You want to slow things down? Go ahead. And when everyone's healthy on that blue line, they're more than willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for Nashville. I mean, Nashville really needs to get it together. Although they are a team that can turn it on and off, you never want to actually have to do it in the middle of a playoff run. It's not optimally good. New Jersey did it against the Rangers in the conference finals in 2012, and it probably cost them the Stanley Cup. I still think it did, because they turned it on that much like they did. That was basically three series in a row where they had to do that. You know, Florida, where they had to like literally just turn it to survive. The Philly series, which was just bizarre from the get-go, where every team scored first, lost. And then obviously the Rangers, you know, that final three games where they just had to push and push and push, had its effects later. And it's not the only case. It won't be the first or last case. But Nashville really does have to shore a few things up. And, hey, Timmy, look at that. Hey,
we
Washington.
You know what? I think now is a good time to close the archive portion of the show.
Yeah.
Let's see how Washington chokes this one around.
Yeah, this one's like the old and brave Sir Robin ran away. He ran away. Yep, we're running away, folks. As always, you can catch the show on iTunes when it downloads in the morning, or on Hard Hits, the Hard Hits Radio Network, of course, via Blog Talk Radio as well. For Timmy Rosenthal and myself, as always, Timmy gets last word.
Aloha.